Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And now, the conundrum you've all been waiting for. Why do Starfleet admirals suck?
Well, Cam, I don't know just yet, Tyler, but I have some theories.
I'm already starting to fall asleep over this topic.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I can't help but watch every time a Starfleet admiral appears on screen or beams aboard one of these ships. I'm like, this is either going to be the most boring exercise in the world, or, this is going to be an antagonist for the captain. Have you noticed this, Cam, in your experience?
Well, no. I mean, what about all the thrilling admiral characters?
There was, yes, that guy.
There was Fitzgerald and Fitzpatrick.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the thing, like, from what I can tell, the admirals are a complete dead end as far as character writing goes.
Yeah.
So I think what we want to do is look at what is the purpose of these admirals in Star Trek? Are there any that are redeemable as characters?
Yeah.
And then what are the pitfalls they fall into?
Yeah.
And what are the real lows?
Oh, there are many. I think we originally discussed maybe doing a best and worst list of admirals. Yep. That best list, extremely short, very lopsided topic.
And but even then, it would be like the most half-hearted like defenses. It's like, I swear to God, you know, Admiral Forrest is really interesting.
He can really rock and roll at the Las Vegas convention.
Yeah, oh boy.
Well, let's just start off. I mean, the basic reason why you have an admiral generally in an episode of Star Trek is an exposition dump. They are there to give the captain his or her mission, tell them where to go, what to do, and just fill in the blanks that the audience might have. It's extremely boring. I've never really been engaged by any of the admirals that appeared on screen to do this. Cam, who's your favorite exposition dumper?
I mean, I guess you have to go with Admiral Ross.
Sure.
If only because he was the most consistent. Actually, you know what? I do like Admiral Nechayev.
I would go with Nechayev because she actually seems to have a personality, unlike one Admiral Ross.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. That's just it. So you either have these real bland figures who, again, it's a real struggle to find any sort of characterization with them within them. And then you have, of course, either these kind of antagonist figures, these all-out evil dudes or dudettes that are there to just really mess with the captain and like give the crew like a real hard time. And I know, Cam, you had like a great question that you posed to me right before the microphones heated up here. What do you think that this could tell us about this particular Star Trek universe?
Well, I think that as I watched a lot of these episodes and did this research into all these hugely boring figures, I began to wonder if the writing of admirals in Star Trek and the representations of them are essentially a fallacy in Gene Roddenberry's vision of utopia.
Sure. And I think that's a great question because all we're supposed to understand about Starfleet is how, you know, it's an upstanding group. There may be a bad apple here or there. But it appears as if, you know, the admiral ranks are where they send all the bad apples, you know? And so what does it really tell you if, like, the higher-ups, the leaders of this entire organization, a very disproportionate number of them seem to be immoral or corrupted somehow?
Or just completely bureaucratic, to the point of just being stifled.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like to imagine that in this bright future that Gene Roddenberry has presented, that some of the annoyances that we deal with in our own day-to-day lives of workplace politics and just incompetent bosses would be gone. But we just see it presented maybe worse in Star Trek.
I can't disagree with that as well. And do you think, I don't know, maybe a part of it, well, here's why I think if you're hired on as an admiral, this is why you are at the disadvantage as an actor or even just, you know, the character itself. Essentially, they're there to prove that the captain knows best. The main character is the captain. If he's given an order that he does not agree with from an admiral, by the end of the episode, you actually have to learn that the captain really knows better than the admiral, the one who has that much more experience than him or her. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough position, because how do you really write a very interesting character when going in, the audience, as well as the characters within the show, know that the admiral is essentially wrong? So you have even something like Nicheev, who I like.
Yeah.
She's there to tell Picard, look, you're too soft. You got to rip those aboriginal people out of that planet, you know?
And the second you do that, the audience does not like this character.
Exactly. Like, you're at a complete disadvantage because the audience is designed not to like this particular character. Cam, what do you think is the least likable admiral? Because here's the thing. There's so many.
God.
There are so many that I just feel completely neutral about. I have zero feelings. I don't even really remember them.
Yeah.
But there are some admirals that really do rub me the wrong way here. Well, is there anyone that pops out to you?
The two that, maybe they aren't the most egregious ones, but they were two that rewatching episodes just jumped out at me as being almost hilariously annoying.
Yeah.
They were both in the original series. One is in the Trouble with Tribbles, and that is Admiral Fitzpatrick, and he's the one who assigns Kirk to guard the grain.
That's one of the most amazing jobs Kirk's ever been assigned,
yeah, it's a total bullshit assignment, and the whole episode is just like comedy of like Kirk having to deal with this idiot admiral giving him this stupid assignment. And it's just like, this is what the bright future is, an idiot admiral giving a stupid assignment. And the other one is Fitzgerald, who is in the episode Mark of Gideon. We should have saved them for our Irish stereotypes too. Mark of Gideon, and that is an episode where Kirk is going to beam down to this really reclusive planet. They're just going to accept Kirk for diplomatic discussions. Kirk disappears. He just vanishes and ultimately shows up on an Enterprise that's completely empty. But Spock is back on the bridge of the Enterprise with the crew, going, well, okay, Kirk never made it down. Can I come down to the planet and figure this out? And the people on the planet are like, no way. We agreed to Kirk. No one else. Sorry. So Spock has to take it to Starfleet. And they bring up this guy, Fitzgerald, who's just like, eh, nah. And Spock's like, sir, I'll be filing a complaint because your decision is completely arbitrary. And he goes, eh, and goes off view screen.
So again, you're back to that bureaucratic mumbo-jumbo.
But like that one seems like making fun of it even. Like in 1968, they were like, yeah, admirals are stupid.
Yeah, and here's just the thing. Like, they are at the disadvantage. The two that kind of stand out to me is, because here's the thing, there are some so-called, quote, evil admirals that we'll discuss as well. But the ones that...
The interesting ones.
Well, exactly. They actually have something we can discuss here. But, like, the ones that rub me the wrong way, I was not a fan of Hansen from Best of Both Worlds. Of course, the...
Old Man's Fantasy.
Old Man's Fantasy. When referencing One Commander Shelby.
Yeah.
That one kind of disturbed me.
He died, though, so that was good.
Sure. He was assimilated by the Borg. Yeah.
And even they didn't want him because he was so boring.
But here's the thing. Like, we did bring up how some of the evil admirals have something interesting, you know, about their characters. Mm-hmm. Here's one. I'm just going to get it out of the gate right here, that I don't think there's anything interesting about this particular guy. One Admiral Doherty from Star Trek Insurrection.
Oh, yeah.
And I like Anthony Zerbe, the actor who played him. The guy was given nothing. Like, you knew from the get-go, Admiral Doherty's wrong. He didn't really have real great arguments. Violated the Prime Directive, blah, blah, blah. Cam, was there anything interesting about, like, Doherty? Did he?
Yeah, there was, actually. That he died by face stretching.
That was the only thing that I did enjoy about his character. It's like the worst facelift ever.
Anthony Zerbe was also the villain in License to Kill, the James Bond movie.
Yes.
Where his head explodes.
He has something. If he's an antagonist,
yeah,
we can guarantee that he's going to have some sort of head-related trauma,
yeah,
as his way to say goodbye to this cruel, cruel world.
No, he was one that jumped out to me, too, of sort of the really obvious villainous admiral.
Yeah.
But not even like... And it'll be interesting when we kind of go into more some of the villainous ones. Like, how many are actually interesting? Because, I mean, Doherty is really boring. He's like, why did you even bother writing this character in?
Yeah.
He's a plot device. He's not even a character.
Well, and I believe in the original draft for Star Trek Insurrection, the idea was to have, like, one of Picard's old friends from the Academy, of course... Yeah. To fill in that role. Mm-hmm. Instead, they get, you know, this mind-numbingly vanilla admiral to just do that. And I'm just like,
oh. I think that just described every admiral.
Well, that's true. But that's the thing. And here's, he also seemed to be a lapdog for Ruafo, the main antagonist. And and that's kind of another consistent thing is a lot of these admirals, they kind of seem like lapdogs. There's one in particular that we'll discuss as well. But
right.
I don't know, Cam, why don't we just dig into it? Let's talk about like kind of the problem that we have with these evil admirals and what they represent in this utopian vision of Gene Roddenberry's.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get him right out of the gate. Admiral Marcus.
Yeah.
Favorite admiral ever or least favorite, Cam?
He's one of the more memorable.
He's memorable.
He's well acted. Peter Weller has huge charisma.
But the issue that I have, and I agree, like well acted, Peter Weller, hats off to RoboCop there, but I did not understand for one instance what his motivation was.
Well, his plan was idiotic.
Yes.
It was, let's warm up a 500-year-old man and have him build us modern technology.
Well, even beyond that, his idea was, we need to start a war with the Klingons.
Yes.
To protect the Federation.
Yes.
It's like, okay. It made no sense. I didn't understand his motivation, but he loves his daughter enough to put her through the most painful transporter beam ever devised.
Yeah.
I don't know, and it's kind of sucky because I think there's so much potential to make this guy a potentially interesting character.
But I feel like he was kneecapped right off the bat because you are introducing him as your villain in a movie with Khan.
Yes.
So you have the most iconic Star Trek villain of all time, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, who's, you know, a big deal with the geek community, and you expect people to pay attention to, like, the 60-year-old, you know, white dude. Well, Admiral, like, there's nothing sexy about the idea of Admiral Marcus versus Khan, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll make this argument, though, because I think you could argue that Admiral Marcus is the main villain of this movie. I think Khan is an antagonist, but I think they kind of wrote him in a way, if they did not screw up the character, they wrote him in a way where he could have been, like, and we brought it up before in the podcast, kind of the uneasy ally further down the road.
Right.
We didn't get that, and so we got, like, this nonsensical main villain in Admiral Marcus, and then we get like this kind of lame Khan reiteration in Benedict Cumberbatch. Both great performances. I love the performances from both those actors in that movie. But I don't know, this whole evil admiral plan didn't just make any sort of sense at all.
And the thing is, if you're going to make Marcus your main villain, which is true, I guess, technically in his role, but ultimately they give all of the interesting things to do to Khan.
Yeah.
He gets the big flashy fight, you know. I mean, Marcus just kind of gets his head crushed kind of off screen by Khan. It's not like he has a huge scene with Kirk or anything like that. He kind of shows up late in the movie. He's not a well-developed or well-utilized character.
Well, you can see that they're trying to establish stuff by saying, hey, this is your daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to give him layers that a lot of admirals do not get. So I'll give them credit for that. But I think...
I kind of disagree with you, though, because Admiral Ross had a son who was friends with Morn, according to a book.
Anyway, moving on from Cam Fiction.
Cam Fiction!
But the big difference here is that we do see, you know, Carol Marcus established as a character. So there is an attempt to make evil Admiral Marcus a layered character, but honestly I couldn't get over him as anything other than just the mustache twirling evil villain. Like, he did not, because if you don't even understand this motivation of your antagonist, your main villain, like, you just kind of, you can't really invest in what the plan is at all.
Yeah, and I just can never stand villains who are that boring, like whose story is that boring.
Well, yeah, just like that simple. It's very much a black and white sort of tale. And I think, I don't know, maybe you'll bring this next admiral up next, Cam, but there are admirals that you can kind of understand where they're coming from, even if they are of that evil admiral leaning.
Are we going to talk about Pressman?
Oh, I was going to talk about one Admiral Nakamura. But, okay, let's go on to Admiral Pressman.
So Pressman, of course, is played by Terry Quinn, and he is in the episode The Pegasus. And this is the episode where, you know, he was worked with Riker back in the day, and he needs Riker's help.
Yes. By the end of it, we discover that the Pegasus had been experimenting with Federation cloaking technology, and they're trying to recover it from an asteroid. Iconic episodes, of course... It'll always be best known as the final episode of Star Trek Enterprise. I would love to see like a cut of those two episodes, Pegasus and These Are the Voyages, to try to do kind of the timeline matched up.
Oh, God.
Just seeing like the actors change form in every scene.
Someone must have done a fan edit.
If not, then I'm going to go make mine sometime this year.
Okay, well, look for that on Pirate Bay.
Sure. But here's the thing. Admiral Pressman, you can understand why he wants to do this. Like,
it's kind of like he's just a scoundrel who's trying to get himself out of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, but even the whole idea of... I believe him when he says that he does not think that the Treaty of Alderaan was in the Federation's favor. He genuinely thinks that they should be able to develop this technology and be able to, you know, have a better defense against, or at least the same advantage that the Romulans have.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand his motivation.
Yeah.
It's also, you have the benefit of having a great actor in Terry O'Quinn. Like, that was such a great performance. Cam, I know you haven't watched Lost yet, but I mean, John Locke is considered like one of the greatest TV characters of all time. You see Terry O'Quinn do his thing, yell at Riker in the ready room.
Yeah.
You just buy this guy as the evil admiral. You understand his motivation. It makes sense to me.
He's imposing and he's charismatic.
My only issue with him is, like, his name is Eric.
Yeah.
Admiral Eric sounds like what, like, a 14-year-old would name himself.
Eric with a K.
Okay, well, that's, you know, very Nordic and strong, like a Viking.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just that episode was great. The only thing that I will take issue, and it really made me question Starfleet, and maybe I'm going to bring it all back to the Admirals, but I'm going off at a bit of a tangent here.
Okay.
So
run
this
wild.
This takes place midway through Season 7 of Next Generation, and they establish that the whole Pegasus incident happened 12 years ago.
Okay.
When Riker was just fresh out of the academy, just 7 months out of the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do the math here, it essentially took Riker about 6 years to graduate from the academy to become first officer of the flagship of the Starfleet.
That's ridiculous.
It's absolutely insane.
It should take only about a day.
Okay.
As we've seen in the new movies.
Well, yeah. I was going to bring that up with Kirk making it from cadet to captain in the course of 24 hours.
Yeah. No, Riker was a slouch.
Well, that's just it. Like, so you can get fast-tracked quite easily. And here's the other thing. If he had been offered captain by the time we get to Season 3, of course, Best of Both Worlds had brought up the fact that he had been offered a captaincy. So he could have made captain in essentially 8-9 years in Starfleet. Instead, Riker decides to sit on this Enterprise for literally 15 years as a commander. That just seems so bizarre to me. But what I'm getting at here is maybe a lot of these, if you judge Starfleet by how fast they fast-track a lot of these people, maybe that's why a lot of admirals don't really belong in Starfleet. Yeah, and they're inexperienced, even though they all seem to be, I would say, an average age of 74.
These admirals, though, wouldn't you assume they've been around a long time in Starfleet?
My guess, though, is that, you know, there's a longer lifespan.
Yeah.
So maybe a lot of these admirals, they don't even join Starfleet until, like, they're 48. And,
well, I mean, wasn't McCoy an admiral in Encounter at Farpoint?
Sure. Yeah, he was.
He was, like, 100 and something.
What do you think his job really was?
He's nothing.
Yeah.
He's
like the admiral emeritus.
He's like a figurehead.
Okay.
He's like, here's, you know, we've got an admiral who's from the original Enterprise.
Do you think the reason Beverly Crusher went back to Starfleet Command was she had to take over for a dead McCoy after he passed away?
That would be amazing.
I think they should have established
that. Tyler, I got to put this podcast on pause while I start my fan fiction.
Your cam fiction.
Cam fiction.
But, I mean, here's the thing. Pressman totally works. You buy the character wholeheartedly, even though, geez, we brought it up on the show before, I would be afraid to serve under that dude.
Oh yeah, he's psychotic.
Yes. But you understand, hey, this phased cloaking, this will give Starfleet an advantage. I understand his motivation far more than I do Marcus building the Vengeance.
Not only that, but generally, if you're in a position like a captain or admiral, you have to have leadership ability.
Yes.
We see this with all of the captains on the show. The main ones, maybe not some of the side ones. But when we get to the admirals, how many of these people seem capable as like leaders of men and women?
They seem capable of
pushing paper.
Or of like doing the most boring book reading at a library ever.
Yeah.
It's like, just kind of like snooze.
Pressman works because you can believe him commanding people. I think Marcus also works in that regard.
I can believe him scaring the shit out of a lot of people.
Yeah,
for sure.
And Nechayev too. I can believe Nechayev commanding people.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get to go ahead, Ken.
I was going to say, let's get to another one who I could see commanding people, and that is Nora Sati, who is the retired admiral who's brought in for the investigation in the episode The Drumhead.
Right.
Klingon conspirator has been found on the ship, who's been sabotaging equipment, and ultimately Nora decides that there's a conspiracy on the Enterprise, and they need to start investigating everyone on the crew. And basically, she's on a witch hunt. And she's really scary.
Yeah.
And I could believe that people would follow her because she's so imposing. And she's played by Gene Simmons, who was an Oscar-nominated actress. Huge career.
Just I thought you were going to say a huge tongue. But
no, massive
career. Not that Gene Simmons?
Not that Gene Simmons.
Okay.
My God.
Come on, Cam. You're just picking it up now?
I am.
Okay.
She starts crooning rock and roll all night.
That's why they're pulling her. They don't understand the black and white makeup, but yeah, that's why she's so imposing.
Wow. Like, don't shoot me with your love gun.
She's going around telling the crew, you don't do that? Well, you just have to lick it up.
Like, this ship is a psycho circus.
Okay.
Moving on. So Nora Sati is kind of like Marcia Gay Harden in The Mist.
Yeah.
Where she is this terrifying fundamentalist who's basically going to take over the entire Enterprise. And she's supposed to be partnered with Picard, but she quickly overrules him.
Hey, that's the Admiral's prerogative.
Yeah. And she is scary.
Yeah. And for a character like that, mm-hmm. you understand, okay, this is why they got to where they are.
Yeah.
And you kind of, to a degree, okay, she is scary, but you can kind of and even Marcia Gay Harden in The Mist, you understand their motivation.
Oh,
though.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's why
it's very clear.
Yeah, somebody like that works. And I do wish they were able to find more consistent admirals to go to. You know, like, they could have, like, their scary admiral, and they could have, you know, their blandy, or even if the scary admiral was in charge of exposition dumps, that'd be a whole lot better than all these, like, bland dudes that just show up on screen, like, every third episode to do this.
Why did they just not use Nechayev all the time?
I don't know. It must have been, like, a price thing. You know, like, just they knew that the actors would be asking for more and more money. It took them a long time, but eventually they get around to a consistent admiral in Deep Space Nine, in Admiral Ross.
Yeah, he was the one worth holding on to.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the writers just realized that
consistency was better than just bland of the week.
But you know what? If you're in a war, you know, it makes sense for you to have, like, a go-to admiral. Correct. So, I mean, I think Admiral Ross first appeared season 5, maybe end of season 4. I believe season 5. So that's 3 seasons of having a consistent admiral. I think, you know, that's good. Voyager, I mean, you're not quite there yet, Cam, but eventually Voyager gets a consistent admiral that they're in contact with, too.
Right.
So, I don't know. I do like the idea of consistency, even if we're getting somebody as snoozy as one Admiral Ross.
Right.
Cam, are there any other evil admirals you think we should highlight? Actually, I do have one that I want to bring up.
Why don't you hit yours, and then there's someone else I want to mention.
I'm talking about the admirals featured in The Undiscovered Country. The conspiracy, the cabal that was going on.
Cartwright.
Admiral Cartwright.
Cartwright.
But of course, played by one Brock Peters, who also played one Joe Sisko. And again, we're back to the evil admirals poking holes in Gene Roddenberry's theory of, like, this utopian federation. Gene Roddenberry was not a fan of The Undiscovered Country, of course. I don't know if it's all because of the admirals, but I do have to believe that's a big part of it, where why would, you know, the leadership of Starfleet want to go and essentially assassinate the Federation president, or I should say the new chancellor of the Klingon Empire.
Right.
So, again, like, but here's the thing. I understand their motivation. I don't agree with them, but I understand why they think this is the best way to preserve the Federation going forward. Cam, any other evil admirals you want to highlight here?
Well, not so much an admiral, but a Commodore. Because often I found, especially in the original series, they often didn't use admirals, they used Commodores.
Well, let's just discuss this very issue quite briefly, because you and I went back and forth last night discussing Admiral versus Commodore.
Yeah, right. Well, the issue was, I mean, I knew we had several Commodores who were actually the ones worth mentioning. It really bummed me out when I found out a lot of them were Commodores. especially with the, when you have the original series.
Yeah.
They really went to Commodores a lot. And I had found a website that listed all the admirals for research for this episode. And they listed all the Commodores, which they had that in brackets, as rear admiral, lower three quarters or something like that. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess they fall under admirals?
Here's the thing. An admiral is an admiral.
Yes.
A Commodore is a Commodore.
Yes.
You know, so admirals, you know, they would command multiple ships or multiple, or like large operations involving multiple ships. Mm-hmm. Commodore simply means, you know, like essentially it's almost even thought of as like kind of an unofficial title, but somebody who could have command of one, more than one ship,
right.
Which is, I know it's kind of a fine line, the difference, but technically, like, because Ben Sisko was commanding the operations of multiple ships during the Dominion War, you could have called him a Commodore.
Right.
Like, I don't think it's certainly set in stone. The term is only ever used once in all of the 24th century.
Right.
That, I believe, is used in Conspiracy. So maybe it was a popular thing back in the 23rd century, but Commodores are no more. All we have are admirals here.
Right.
But there is a good story with one Commodore who did outrank the entire crew of the Enterprise.
They would often, instead of having an admiral who outranked Kirk, they would bring in Commodores. So, yeah, the big
They serve the same function,
essentially. They do, yeah.
Yeah.
The big one to mention, you have to mention, is Matthew Decker. Played by William Wyndon in the episode Doomsday Machine.
Yes. This was not an episode I had seen yet.
This is one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek of all time.
Oh, I dig it. I dig it, believe me.
Yeah.
The USS Constellation already did its suicide mission.
Right.
One Decker, he wants to make sure that he takes the Enterprise on its own suicide mission to destroy the planet killer.
Yes.
Cam, what do you think about this guy's decision-making process throughout?
He doesn't seem quite clear.
No. And here's what I wrote in my notes. I mean, do you think he was having some mental health issues before the whole incident? Or do you think the planet killer caused his nonsensical behavior?
Well, this would be a theme that Star Trek did touch upon in the original series, where, like, captains, or I guess in this case a Commodore, would have an encounter with an alien life that left them basically kind of mentally ill.
Right.
Like, Kirk has the episode of Obsession, where he's chasing this cloud creature, and he is absolutely obsessed because the thing had, you know, damaged his ship before, and he had to hunt it down a la sort of Moby Dick. And we know
I'm shocked that Star Trek would go to the Moby Dick motif.
Right.
There. Okay.
And I think that Moby Dick theme ties into this episode as well.
Yeah.
Where it's essentially, yeah, Matthew Decker has gotten obsessed that he has to destroy the planet killer.
And it doesn't really end so well once he hops into that shuttle. But
no.
Essentially, like, but what you figure out is that this guy who outranks Kirk, he's essentially there to show that Kirk is right, like, or even Spock, because for much of the episode, Spock is in command of the actual Enterprise,
yeah.
While Decker is on the bridge. It's there to show that the characters do know best, and but it's in a way that's a little bit different than, say, somebody who's bland like Admiral Doherty. I think Decker's, like, fascinating.
And he's insane.
Yeah.
So that adds extra tension. Like, you have that scene where he's basically overruling Spock. And you can see the crew realizes, you know, Decker's insane, and they want Spock to kind of fight back. But Spock is like, no, he is the admiral. I have to step down to him. And that's like, there's so much tension just in that moment.
But here's what I do like, and this is how I think it ties into kind of the overall theme that we're talking about, though.
Mm-hmm.
It is, at a certain point, Decker says, you know, I'm in command according to every rule in the book.
Yeah.
So it's really going by kind of the spirit of the law when it comes to Federation versus the rule of the law, and whether a guy like this should really have this leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
It just brings it back to me, like, how do they put, like, so many, like, just absolutely deranged, like, folks in the Admiralty? Like, it's like Starfleet really needs to do a better selection process. They don't want Wesley in the Academy,
yeah,
but they do want admirals like this.
I'm willing to give Decker a slight benefit of the doubt, because I'm just going to guess that he was completely fine up until his encounter with the Doomsday Machine, and he went insane.
Okay, and I kind of had to, in my own interpretation, I figured that's what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, when he was in charge of the Constellation.
Now, do you think that Kirk would have handed over the bridge to Decker?
Oh, that's a great... I don't think so. I think it makes sense to me that Spock would.
Mm-hmm.
I totally buy that from Spock. I think Kirk would have just... he would have deferred to McCoy's diagnosis and said, no, sir, I'm going to have to say no.
Yeah.
Good luck trying to arrest me here on the bridge with my crew.
Right.
Take it up with Starfleet Command once we get back.
Mm-hmm.
I think Starfleet Command would have backed him on that particular issue.
Is that why his son turned out the way he did?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
okay, well, we've covered a lot of the evil admirals, and guess what? We're not going to get it boring by talking about kind of the bland ones. I like to think of this as the consistent ones. Of course, we have one, Admiral Ross. Cam, is he your favorite admiral ever? He appeared in the most episodes.
No.
Yeah.
He's more like the one I've just... consistent's the word, but also I would say when I was kind of ranking them as good, it was the ones who seemed to be capable of doing their jobs.
Yeah.
And I think Admiral Ross is good at his job.
I never saw any evidence that he was incompetent.
No.
We do get a little bit of characterization from him in the episode Inter Arma Enim Silent Legis, mm-hmm. Where, of course, it's revealed that he's kind of working with Section 31.
Right.
You know, but beyond that, they never really follow up with it. I don't think it adds that much to... how much I'm invested in that particular character.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. If you're going to have a guy who's there for an exposition dump and it's a wartime, there are worse admirals you can get than Admiral Ross.
No, I agree.
But here's my issue with him.
He's a
non-character. Here's my issue with him. And this is really the biggest example of this was in What You Leave Behind, the final episode of Deep Space Nine, where... Sisko, Martok, and Ross, they all beam down to Cardassia after it's just been ravished. And Martok's in it for the blood wine. He's sipping it. He's enjoying it. And Sisko's not celebrating. He pours his blood wine out and walks away. Then Admiral looks over at Sisko and sees, oh, he's doing it. I better pour out my blood wine too. So then he pours it out. He's essentially Sisko's lapdog. Here's the thing. Would Sisko ever defer to one Admiral Ross? Do you think?
No.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I never got that vibe.
No. So, I don't think he's an egregious character, but he does have that same issue that all the other ones have that are doing the exposition dump. It's like they're just kind of bland non-entities.
Yeah.
Somebody who's, I think, has a little bit more layers to him, Cam, would be one, say, Admiral Forrest. But who do you like more, Admiral Forrest in Enterprise or Admiral Ross in Deep Space Nine?
I think I like Admiral Forrest more in Enterprise because I think just Von Armstrong is more interesting as an actor.
If anything, we get him as captain of the evil Enterprise in Mere Darkly. So,
right.
I mean, like, we never got evil Admiral Ross. So I do like Captain Forrest as featured in the Mere universe.
The thing about Forrest is ultimately his role in the show is far less interesting than Ross's.
Yeah.
He just tends to give exposition over view screens.
And it's also... You can tell that he is genuine buddies with Archer.
Yeah.
We never get that with any of the other admirals. I mean, even Picard in Journey's End, he's literally serving, like, Nechayev, like, Beleriand canapes to, like, bridge, you know, the gap between the two, you know.
Yeah.
It's so clear that Forrest and Archer are part of the same old boys club that, of course, Trip belongs to. And, you know, all those guys playing water polo.
That's right.
But, I don't know, and here's the thing.
Doesn't Forrest get blown up?
Yeah, I was going to bring up, he has an arc. Like, he gets blown up on Vulcan, I believe.
Right.
You know, and so it does serve a purpose. I did like that Vulcan arc, and he was a big... Well, his death was a significant part of it, at the very least. And they did bring him back, for In a Mirror Darkly. So, I don't know. If you had to make me choose between two characters that are kind of bland, I definitely give it to Admiral Forrest.
No, I agree very much. Like, I think I like the actor more than I like the character, but I think Von Armstrong delivers exposition in a way that it doesn't make my brain just turn off.
Absolutely. And we kind of touched upon this in our Geordi LaForge episode, but there are certain actors, I'd say Brent Spiner is one, they can deliver exposition in a great way. Not so much with, say, Geordie LaForge, LeVar Burton, but right. I agree. I think if Forrest is there to do an exposition dump, I'm okay. I like the actor. It works
for right.
me. Cam, I need to bring it up, though. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about kind of these consistent admirals, the ones that appear, you've yet to meet one Owen Paris.
Right. I have met him in Caretaker, but this was before he was recast as Richard Hurd.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious. What are your thoughts, just how he's been built up by the stories that Tom has told of him? I don't know. What's your impression of one Owen Paris?
I have no impressions whatsoever.
Well, I remember watching the show before we ever reintroduced to Paris with Richard Hurd's casting later on in the series, but I just thought, you know, he must have been like the worst father ever based on like all the stories Tom was sharing. But here's the thing, like, maybe if Tom's like joining the Maquis, leaving Starfleet, maybe he doesn't really have the best relationship with his father at yeah. that point. So we do get to see Admiral Paris appearing via subspace connection that Reg Barkley is able to make in Voyager.
Okay.
Believe me, Cam, you'll get there to the point where Troy and Barkley are recurring characters on Voyager.
I can't wait.
It'll be great. But I don't know. Here's the thing. Like, it's interesting because we do get these kind of admirals that are father figures, which is interesting in the way that Janeway's father was also an admiral, as established.
Yes, he was.
In, was that episode Coda?
Coda, yeah.
Coda, okay. We have that with Owen Paris as well. And I don't know, it's kind of that overall paternalism that all these admirals represent, but this is very literal in this case.
Why are those such, like, kind of dull fathers, though? It's like, it doesn't yeah. feel like the captains are trying to appeal to these kind of giving presences. They're all these just kind of, and it's not even like you can even say they're, like, domineering father types. It's like a lot of them are just milquetoast.
Yeah. Well, and that's just kind of the fate of, like, all these admirals, essentially, on the show. Yeah. What kind of irks me, though, is, like, why is the kind of the fate of, like, every officer to become an admiral? Because you see, like, all these officers that we meet on the show. Oh, yeah, my dad's an admiral, you know, or yeah. something like that. I do like Geordie LaForge's father, I think, was, like, a lieutenant command. I think Geordie may have outranked his own father or something.
But we also see, like, several of the captains are, like, you know, kind of threatened or considering the admiral role. I mean, and we'll get into that a little bit more later, but that's also a constant kind of threat that they're, you know, often fighting against.
Yeah, it really tells you something where...
It's like the elephant graveyard. Like, you go to the admiralship when you're going to die.
But it just seems like one of the things I did not quite dig about Star Trek, and they did try to address this a little bit, is that it seems as if everybody in the entire Federation, all they want to do is become Starfleet officers.
Right.
And then just move up the ladder. And I don't know if that's really, I don't know, is that a great message for Utopia where, you know, we've got peace and all this sort of stuff, but you're only really doing good if you're in Starfleet and you're moving up the ranks and becoming a captain or an admiral or whatever.
Well, it's funny to me that, like, you know, one of the great dystopian stories is, like, Terry Gilliam's Brazil. And that is all about sort of the bureaucracy gone amok.
Yeah.
Or just gone horribly awry. And it's like, is that really that different than the utopia of Starfleet, where all of your admirals have gone insane or are doing nightmarish things or have parasites in their ears or whatever, or are just completely bumbling and incompetent? It's like, is this a utopia versus the dystopia of Brazil?
Well... Perhaps. I would just say, and here's the thing, I think it's mostly just a storytelling conceit.
Yeah.
Because they're there to show that the captain's always right. And right. And even if they're the bland guy who's just giving orders, or he's or she is the evil admiral, all you're taking away from it is the captain is correct. So, I don't know. One last admiral that I'll highlight here before we maybe move on to the next category, or one Admiral Tyler Perry. He was very bland, and I'm glad we have not seen him again.
Okay.
There you go.
I did want to throw a reference towards, actually, another Commodore, which is Commodore Robert April in the Counterclock Incident.
Well, Cam, Commodore is not an admiral, and Commodore Admiral Robert April is non-canon, as it appears in the animated series.
I would still like to talk about him, because, again, this is a case of someone being brought in who's superior to Kirk, and is he the most heroic depiction of an admiral we've seen?
No. Because he's not an admiral.
I mean, of a superior, I should say.
Well, Captain Picard is a superior officer to Commander Riker. Cam, we're talking about admirals here. I'm sorry, man.
Superior to a captain.
Well, Admiral or Robert April was quite old, so he's got that going for him.
But he saved the day, ultimately. When the Enterprise, everyone on the crew is getting younger and younger, we get to see April become what he used to be and save, ultimately, the day.
Ultimately, if this was a canon representation of Star Trek... Cam, you're the one who keeps bringing up, like, storybooks and, like, comic books. Cam fiction. Yeah, like, I was just kind of like, I don't know. Hey, Robert April, he's appeared in one of the funniest episodes of Star Trek ever.
Robert April is, we should say, though, like, a canon character.
Yeah.
So, and this is the only depiction we have of him, I'm saying. So, I'm going to assume that the character, like, when they write him, they are at least imagining this as being what the character is. To a certain degree. Would you agree with that?
Sure, yeah. Like,
I mean, would you say
Look, I could write my own, like, depiction of Robert April. He could be a total jerk. It's as canon as...
I'm just saying, this glimpse of April we get, would you say he is the most heroic, sort of superior to captain character we've gotten?
No.
No?
No. Okay. And I'll give it to you right now. I think Admiral Pike is probably
yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
the best depiction. Like he, like, and that includes some of the other admirals that we'll discuss in just a few moments. I think Admiral Pike's a great character. I believe him as a superior to Kirk. And it sucks when he died. I was bummed out. Spoiler alert for all those people that haven't been in the theater since 2012. But
it's so funny though. I always just think of him as Captain Pike.
Okay. Now, yeah. Captain Pike from the original pilot or Captain Pike from the 2009 film?
Well, I mean, obviously, I know he's Captain Pike in the original, in the Menagerie in the Cage.
Yeah.
I think, though, of the first film, the 2009 film.
Okay.
I don't think so much of his role in Into Darkness because it was kind of a throwaway death role.
Do you think that he would have much preferred to end up on that planet as featured in the Menagerie?
I think he would have preferred that. I think that's a happier ending.
Very well. Yeah. Very well. All right. Well, I don't, Cam, I think there's, you know what? Why don't I throw this question at you? And I think this will lead us into a detailed conversation about another very noteworthy admiral. But what?
It's about Brackett and unification?
Sure. who obviously won some sort of like fan contest to be cast on the show. Guys, go listen to the unification episode for our discussion about. I don't know, she must have been an amateur actor who was, like,
she
hired.
She wasn't, no.
How, okay, well, this surprises me, because she wasn't even looking, like, in the right direction. Like, it was just bizarre.
I think it's bad direction.
Okay. Was that a Les Landau episode?
I believe so, okay. Yeah.
Well, I like Les Landau, so... No offense.
So do I, but that episode is kind of the pits in
it's
terms
really
of direction.
It's really weird in terms of direction. It's surprising coming from a consistent... Next gen director.
Yeah.
But here's the question I want to throw out to you. But I mean, of all the main captains, who do you think are the most suited towards admiralty? Maybe we'll save one particular captain. Let's save Captain Kirk for last. But let's start with Archer. We actually find out that he does become an admiral. This is I think based on exposition from the reboots, isn't it? Or is this the alternate reality?
He became an admiral in the second part of In a Mirror, Darkly.
Okay. I thought like there was like a throwaway line that there's an Admiral Archer, and this was going back to I think Into Darkness maybe established.
He
that.
Did become an admiral.
Yeah,
I believe.
But I don't know. Like I do you buy him as an admiral, or do you think he's going to be that guy who's going to be yearning to be on the bridge of a ship?
I actually do buy Archer as an admiral. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you get to the end of season 4 Enterprise, we are seeing Archer sort of at the end of his journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after I feel like the Zindi War kind of does him in.
Yeah.
I think anything past that, he obviously has his adventures throughout season 4, but when he gets back to Starfleet, I think that's it. Like, I think he's ready to become, you know, the Federation president.
Okay. I don't like that idea, though.
No,
I really.
See, to me, like, I feel like a lot of the captains, they are these permanent explorers. I felt like Archer was ready to move on.
No. Sorry, I agree with that, but like, I don't like the idea of him becoming Federation president.
Okay.
Because and again, this is something that bugs me a little bit about this universe, where there's so much mixing between kind of the Starfleet, which is essentially like, it is a military organization. I'd like to think of them as explorers, but rank-wise, it's military. Mm-hmm. This mixing between kind of the military Starfleet and the civilian Federation, where it's pretty much admirals dictating like Federation or civilian policy. And so I don't like the idea of, like, he's essentially turned into, like, an Eisenhower character, you know, like a guy who goes from, you know, this renowned military leader into command of, you know, the civilian operation. I don't think military people are well suited to govern civilian life. So I don't like that being his final destination. I do kind of agree with you. I think maybe his journey is coming to a close. If he's going to go shuffle paper behind a desk, I believe it. I mean, that guy went far, you know? Yeah. Like, so yeah, I do agree with you there. So, okay, I can buy him as an admiral.
I feel like he's not written as a permanent sort of, you know, Peter Pan figure type. Like,
sure.
You know, I don't feel like he's out there chasing the stars for his entire career.
You bring that up, and why don't we go into Captain Picard, though? Because you could totally see this guy as somebody behind a desk at Starfleet Command, but I would be shocked and mortified if there was ever a canon, let me say that again, canon depiction of one Captain Picard serving as an admiral. And I think even before he met James Kirk in Star Trek Generations and Kirk told him, don't ever let them take away the ship from you.
Right.
I still don't think that Picard would have. I don't think he would have accepted the admiralty.
Do you think that would have been the case had he not served with the crew he served on during the Next Generation?
You know what? I think that's a very good point to bring up, because that is certainly a guy who had an arc where, like, he's very, very aloof for the first few seasons. Very aloof.
I could see season one Picard wanting to get that tour of duty done with and move on.
Absolutely. But it's so obvious, you know, by the end of it, like, that crew is his family. Like, literally his entire family, except his sister-in-law, is burnt to death.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. But here's the thing. They are his family. And maybe that's why you see Riker stick around for 15 years. Like, they're all, like, and Riker doesn't really come from, like, a real strong family either.
No.
Troy, her mom is Loxana. You can understand why she would adopt this family instead.
Right,
look at Worf. Data, he's got big family issues. The only one that has a family is Geordi, really.
Right.
So, yeah, I totally buy everybody becoming kind of surrogate family members for each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I honestly, I believe season one, like, Picard, you know, getting in and out of there with, you know, a different crew and sitting behind the desk for the rest of the life. I think that was a very important journey that character went through, serving on the Enterprise with that particular crew camp.
Kind of learning the importance of the crew as family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Kim, do you think, you know, if it wasn't for Kirk, Picard may, there's a bigger possibility that Picard would have become an admiral? I don't think so either.
I think the way that All Good Things ends, I don't get the feeling of a guy who's like, well, I'm ready to become an admiral now.
Yeah, and you bring up, you know, Archer's journey.
Yeah.
And he seems, after the Zindi arc, you know, and I totally buy him in season four as a captain, but, like, he's ready to kind of move on with his life there. Picard, no, he's there to journey and explore. Picard is an explorer, and I think among all the Star Trek captains, I would make the biggest argument for him as a genuine explorer. This is an archaeologist. That's his hobby, you know?
Right.
So I totally buy that there. What about... you have something to say?
I was just going to say, speaking of the TNG crew, what about Riker?
Well, okay.
He does become an admiral in All Good Things.
I was going to bring up All Good Things Riker as well, because here's the thing. He kind of fits the bill of, like, the antagonist admiral who... and it's really up to the captain, in this case, Old Man Picard, to really prove him wrong, prove the admiral wrong. You know, the Picard is always right. So, and I kind of feel bad for Riker if that's where his end story is. But I think the big reason why is Troy. We find out in the alternate reality, Troy dies. I can buy Riker as an admiral, just not a bitter admiral, as long as Troy does not, you know, succumb to whatever she died from in that alternate universe.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, to me, so much of Riker is about advancement.
Yeah.
So it, to me, complete, he's very much a company man. While he has, you know, episodes where he's disagreeing with admirals or what have you, orders from up high. I think that ultimately he's a guy who ultimately wants to get into an admiral position, but, yep. but do it on his own terms and be hopefully an admiral we could talk about positively.
I agree with you, but then isn't it just so bizarre that he stuck around the Enterprise for 15 years, well, being such a career-minded guy? That's why I think Best of Both Worlds Part 1 is such a great Riker episode, is because he's having those career struggles. He's mm-hmm. He even says to Troy, like, what am I doing with my career? Like, yeah. Why am I still aboard this ship? You know? Part of it, I think, is what you brought up before, is just how they become kind of a surrogate family. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I buy Admiral Riker myself.
Okay.
What about... I have some thoughts about the potential for an Admiral Sisko.
Admiral Sisko kind of scares me, because as a captain with the powers he had, he was willing to gas planets.
Yeah.
I'm scared of what he would do as an admiral.
Here's the thing. I totally buy... Okay, earlier on in the series, I would buy Sisko as... seeking out that Admiral's Sea. I buy that. By the end of the series, his fate is with the prophets there. Like, I don't think if he ever returns from the Celestial Temple, I don't think he's interested in resuming, a command of a starship, much less going through the ranks and becoming an admiral. This guy's a demigod.
It would be a little weird and a little boring.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at Sisko in a similar kind of vein as Worf, where, like, Worf's future is not dictated by what Starfleet offers. He may go left, he may go right, he may go to Klingon. He's going to kind of go where his own personal journey takes him. I look at Sisko very much the same way.
Right.
I feel like Sisko, could go with Starfleet, or he could go, become a demigod. He's going to go where his own personal journey takes him. He's not going to be following strict Starfleet, regulations. Like, he's not a company man either way.
Where do you think his journey took him, though, by the end of the series?
Oh, that's so tough to say.
I don't think it is. I don't think it's with Starfleet anymore.
Oh, no, I don't think. No.
Yeah, so I don't ever picture...
He becomes the Star Child from 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I buy it, they've got similar looking heads.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. For me, I don't see Sisko season 4 and beyond. I don't see him becoming an admiral. And it's weird because essentially, like I brought up before, he's in kind of dictating strategy for fleets during the Dominion War.
Right.
This is a guy, you better believe he would have been given the promotion to admiral as soon as that war officially wound up.
Well, here's the other thing. Now, I think Sisko would be an amazing admiral in war. How do you think he would be as an admiral in peace?
Well, do you think he would have been that antagonistic admiral as
Does
well?
Does he have kind of that itchy trigger finger? Not saying he would start wars like Marcus or something like that.
Sure.
But just would be more bored. Like, he's kind of a guy who needs conflict. He needs to be resolving things.
Do you think he could have been an Eric Pressman?
I don't think he'd be a Pressman. I just think he would be bored if it was like, things are going well, we're just exploring.
Yeah.
Like, because, the entire series of DS9 is him on the station fraught with conflict, and it's his job to resolve all of these problems.
Well, there's a lot of admirals stationed at star bases. Yeah. I think Admiral Ross even had an office on Deep Space Nine.
Right.
It could have just been Sisko in charge of that fleet while Kira had actual command operations of Deep Space Nine,
But can you imagine him just overseeing, like, a peaceful region?
How peaceful do you think post Dominion War Cardassia really is?
Well, that's quite true.
So I don't know. There could have been interesting. I think there's potential for him not to be bored, but I agree with you. I think when you see what an admiral's job is compared with what a captain's job is, there is a big drop off there.
Right.
So I there's potential for him to do something he's interested in. But again, I just think it's all kind of moot. I don't think Sisko's, picking up those extra pips at this point.
No, I agree.
Well, we got one captain who we saw on screen.
As an admiral. Yeah.
Janeway. Do you buy it? I do.
I do, too.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's interesting. She does her 7 years' time in the Delta Quadrant. She comes back. It looks as if right away she's like, yes, I will accept this offer as admiral.
I'm not going back out there again.
No, I learned my lesson. One command is enough for me.
Yeah.
But she kind of, and it's interesting because she is a scientist by trade. That's what her role was aboard the ships, serving under one Captain Paris. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that, kind of this explorer, this scientist would just become a desk jockey, essentially. But
don't you see that side of her, though, in Voyager?
Oh, absolutely.
I really do. Like, I can completely see her as someone...
the in-charge kind of... Yeah.
I totally buy it. And not only that, but I would respect her in that role. I think she would be good at it.
Yeah. What do you think her relationship is with Picard, though? Because obviously she's given him orders in Nemesis. Do you think he's like, oh, thank God it's not Nechayev anymore?
I think they would get along.
Yeah.
You know, they may not be best friends or, you know, playing water polo or what have you. But
no? Okay.
But I do think that there would be a certain respect between the two of them.
What if Janeway told Picard, you're going to have to forcibly remove these Aboriginal people from this planet?
Like, where do you want them?
Wow, okay. Just that easy. He really must not have liked Nechayev that much there. But I do like that episode that Nechayev, she's saying, look, I agree with you, Picard. Like, I argued the same points you're arguing. It's not up to me. Like, yeah. You just got to follow orders. This is, I'm just the messenger here, so.
It's a bummer to me that they couldn't have found a way to give Janeway a bigger role in Nemesis. I really think that would have been an interesting thing to do, is to take a character from another show and present them as, like, now sort of being in charge and giving Janeway a little more to do. I'm not saying make her the star of the movie or anything, but present her as a figure that has more than a, you know, a small cameo.
Well, and this is where you and I split, because here's the thing. They could have just had it with, like, a no-name admiral once again.
Yeah.
If it's going to be something that we recognize, I'd say, yeah, go for it with Janeway. I know you kind of complained about the appearance of Mark Leonard in the Undiscovered Country. You said, like, why even waste him on a cameo? I'm like, hey, if we're gonna have a diplomatic scene,
yeah,
why not have a diplomat that we recognize in Sarek?
I'm actually a fan of the Janeway one, though. I think that's really fun fan service. I think it's a great character to throw in there, giving you know, exposition, because I think she just grounds it so well. But I would have loved to have just seen that character maybe expanded in the movie. I think that would have been interesting to have Janeway play a more prominent role in a movie. Because you're never going to get a Voyager movie, but it would have been interesting to see Janeway as Admiral. And you wouldn't even have to explain anything, because if you hadn't seen the show, it doesn't matter. You're seeing the Janeway character as an Admiral.
Would have been better if the timelines were shifted just a little bit and we had Admiral Janeway instead of Admiral Doherty.
Well, fair enough, yeah.
Well, Cam... we've come to kind of the zenith of the show now.
Yeah.
Of course, what do you think of one Admiral Kirk?
They gave her back to me.
Well, let me throw this at you. Can you believe Kirk? We've been talking about evil admirals, antagonistic admirals. Put yourself in Decker's shoes.
Yeah.
Captain Will Decker.
Not crazy Decker.
Okay, so there's Matt Decker, and then there's... William Deckard?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got that clear.
William Human Adventure Decker.
Yeah. I kind of believe it. This is another case of the captain having to deal with, you know, kind of that forceful admiral who thinks he knows best. But in this case, the captain, or I should say the admiral, kind of knows best, right? Is this the only case where the admiral is actually the one who is all-knowing?
Yeah, he is, and I also think it's really interesting that Kirk would have taken the admiral job, because
he's bizarre,
not a guy who seems to me like he would enjoy it in any way, shape, or form.
Well, let's discuss that. What do you think the motivation would have been for Kirk to take that admiralty?
I have no idea, because I can understand...
because he instantly regrets it, does he not?
Yeah, yeah. And if they'd thrown in a mention, like, I don't know, maybe he was in... he lost crew members in some sort of conflict, or he had an injury, or something. Like, give us some sort of reason for it. Antonia going missing.
Sure.
Whatever. Just give us something. But we never get a reason. It's just like, I guess they were like, well, it's been however many years between, you know, the original series and the films.
I think, this is what we discussed. We realized that it's a short break between the original series and the films. I think essentially what happened is... they had the two remaining years of that five-year mission that we did not get to see.
Yeah.
Then I believe what happened is after that five-year mission, there was a two-year gap between when the motion picture took place. So it was 2 years after he leaves the Enterprise as captain that he's been serving as admiral. You can tell this has been 2 years of hell for Captain Kirk.
Yeah, I just feel like they promoted him because they wanted to show that he'd gone somewhere in the time between the series and the films.
Yeah, I think it was absolutely a narrative-based decision as opposed to kind of a character-based thing that Kirk realistically would have done. I just think it was like maybe just I don't, he just did not know what to do. Like, if we're trying to justify it, you know, retcon it in our own minds, a little cam fiction, if you will, then I don't know. I just wish I could justify better why he decided to become an admiral.
What's real head-scratching to me is that it took them till the fourth one to, like, get him out of the admiral job.
But they realized, oh, God, this guy should not be admiral.
But, like, it seemed like the motion picture was all about him kind of getting his groove back.
Yeah.
And getting kind of back in the captain role. Why would they just not end it with him stepping down?
That, well, and here's it. So you start him off in Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
He's kind of, like, hanging out at the academy.
Yeah. Like making excuses for him to be there.
Yeah. Because it's not even like he's in charge of the academy. It's really Captain Spock who's in charge of these particular cadets.
Yeah.
You know? He's just hanging around.
Yeah.
Like, what is his job? Like, I don't even know what he's an admiral of.
Well, I think we've seen admirals often don't do very much.
That's true.
He's kind of one of those.
I just wish he had one of those sticks that Captain Stiles walked around with. But yeah, so we have, and here's the thing. Okay, so you end Star Trek II. That's immediately followed by the search for Spock. Mm-hmm. We can understand why Kirk wasn't demoted
right at
that point. And then, of course, with the whales, we finally get that demotion with all the shit that he pulls to find Spock again.
Yeah.
So, okay, it takes them, you know, four movies to do it. I think it's a good arc for him. But then we follow it up with him searching for God now that he's captain again with the oldest crew in the history of Starfleet.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Do you feel like there is a real arc, though, about his struggling with the admiral job?
A real arc?
I feel like there is in the motion picture, but I feel like after that, it's just kind of them finding excuses to have him on the ship, where he just acts as he always did as Captain Kirk.
Yeah, absolutely. And because here's the thing, like, he's not even captaining the Enterprise in number four.
Yeah.
He's in charge of the bounty.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's...
Admiral Kirk doesn't have the same ring to it either.
It doesn't. Well, it's not alliterative. They'd have to call him Admiral Irk or something. I don't know. But here's the thing. This is why I do love that exchange between Kirk and Picard in Generations. He's like, don't ever let them take it away from you. And I think you can just see how heartbroken he was that he spent essentially 10 years as an admiral. Because, again... Spent 2 years after the five-year mission to motion picture. I think there was another huge timeline jump between the motion picture and Wrath of Khan.
Right.
I think it was about like 8 years or something.
Right.
What was he doing during that time?
That is a good question.
Like what? Like
who? I'm sure there are some books that you could read that would fill all that in for you.
But I'm just saying, who was in charge of the Enterprise at that time? Was it Spock? Like. Because Spock's a captain, but I don't know, like, who was, like, and Deckard's, like, off on his own human adventure with Ilya. Like, I don't know what was going on with the Enterprise. Was it just in mothballs, essentially? That's what I kind of get the feeling.
Maybe.
I don't know, because it's, essentially they're using it as a training ship for cadets so that Spock would drop in on.
Right.
It just seemed really weird to me. Spock was in command of...
he was called Captain Spock.
But he was in command of the Enterprise at the beginning of Wrath of Khan until Spock said, look, I have no ego. You outrank me. Go ahead, take command of the ship. And Kirk was like, oh, twist my arm. Okay.
Yeah. And then he immediately becomes a science officer again.
That's true.
You know, it's not like Riker suddenly starts commanding the science consoles when Picard's on the bridge.
That's true. Well, you know what? They didn't really have a chair other than at the science station Spock, so, yeah.
But some poor science officer's like, oh, gets kicked right off the bridge.
He's a cadet. He'll get his chance once again.
Will he? This crew is like 80 and they show no signs of stopping.
That's true. And like half those cadets die in fighting the Reliant.
Yeah, and then they're left completely off the ship in Star Trek 3.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay. Well, maybe not. I would be pissed off too.
Well, getting back to the point of the Gene Roddenberry utopia, just kind of seal it up. Is this an issue with... Because... Very few like to really question Gene Roddenberry's vision of utopia. And I know we've kind of toyed with an episode about sort of Gene Roddenberry as a creator of Star Trek and his sort of his philosophies of it. Is this an issue with the philosophy? Like, does this show that maybe it wasn't as maybe well thought out as we like to often think it was?
I think it's more of a storytelling conceit. It's a whole lot easier for you to have like the antagonistic superior officer drop in.
This many times, though?
This many times. But the fact that so many of them are just evil or have evil conspiracy theories, I think that's really what's, you know, poking the holes in this utopian vision.
And he himself portrayed them as dumb, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if dumb doesn't mean something's not utopian.
Right, yeah, okay. You know, I often wonder, though, if he was treating the admirals the way the studio heads treated him. That was often my wonder, is it was kind of like he was the captain, right? Like, I feel like Roddenberry saw himself as, like, the Captain Kirk.
I would assume it's more going back to maybe his military days. Yeah. Like, it just his own perceptions of superior officers, or even just him serving in LAPD, his own perceptions of superior officers there, perhaps. Yeah.
But it's funny that Roddenberry was so annoyed that Star Trek became very military-like in the films. But so much of the command structure of Starfleet is so military organized.
Which I go back and forth on this particular point, though, because I think, yes, it is designed as a military operation, but they're explorers, very much in the way that, you know, say, Captain Cook was an explorer, or Magellan, you know.
Kirk.
Sorry, I misspoke. You know, but I don't know. Let's be realistic. I do think Nick Meyer went a little bit too far with his interpretation of the militarism of it. You know, he kept, like, in the Undiscovered Country, they keep making reference to the Armada.
Right.
It's not an Armada. You know, like that. Yeah. That is, like, those are warships.
Yeah.
You know, and Gorkon kept saying to Kirk, what are you going to do now that there's peace between us? Right. Kirk's going to go explore.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. So, I don't know. I don't know if this really pokes holes so much in the utopian vision so much as just lazy storytelling.
Right. Okay, well, I was going to get into Chekhov becoming an admiral in Star Trek Renegades.
That's
I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. We would love to hear what you guys have to say about admirals if you made it to this far into the podcast.
We praise you if you have.
Yes, exactly. Believe me, I wasn't even sure I wanted to show up for this admirals podcast. But we want to know, you know, are you a big Nechayev fan? Were there some we left out that you think actually contributed to the show in a positive way that we should have mentioned? I would love to know if fans have feelings one way or the other about some of these admirals that maybe we didn't even think to mention.
Or are you an old man's fantasy?
Also, we would love to hear your reviews. Leave them on our iTunes page. They help us get higher listings on the Star Trek podcast page, and that in turn will help us become demigods ourselves.
Yes, of course. And if you guys don't already have your tickets to see us at the Las Vegas panel this August, I hear tickets are sold out, so good luck.
You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vengeance, commanded by Admiral Marcus Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, and as in Nakamura is my favorite admiral ever.
So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.